Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Welcome to Yoga, Birth, Babies, a podcast produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. We will be diving into everything prenatal yoga, birth, and baby-related, hoping to inspire, educate, and empower you through your journey into motherhood. Thank you for listening.
Hi, I'm Deb Flaschenberg. I'm your host for Yoga Birth Babies. And today we're going to talk about transitioning back to work during a pandemic. What does that look like? How do you find childcare? How do you negotiate work? And how do you balance family and work? So to have this conversation, I have Lauren Smith Brody. She is the founder of the Fifth Trimester Movement and Consulting, which supports the transition back to work after baby to keep women in the workplace and foster gender equality. Lauren has been a featured speaker at companies and organizations, including Facebook, the New York Times, Google, and American Express, just to name a few. Lauren's also a longtime leader in women's magazine industry, and she was previously the executive editor of Glamour magazine. She was raised in Ohio, Texas, and Georgia, and she now lives in New York City with her husband, two sons, and a rescue puppy. So I think you'll really enjoy that conversation. She has a bundle of information I think you'll like. Now, also, a little bit of side note. You might hear a bit of noise in the background. Now, hopefully, Eddie, our sound engineer, can work his magic. But about halfway through the conversation, I hear a vroom and a look out my window, and there's a mini bulldozer. Yes, I said that, mini bulldozer starting to clean out the house that's being built across the street. They were clearing out the yard. And I thought, all right, well, we're just going to go with it. I'm not going to stop this conversation, but I think Eddie should be able to handle that. But just in case you hear a little sound in the background, that's what it is. Keep listening. It's a great conversation, though. I also want to take a moment and thank everyone that's left a rating and review about the podcast. It helps people find the podcast. And I really, really appreciate your time and effort in doing that. If you haven't, please jump over and leave a rating or review. Again, I really appreciate your time and effort. And last thing, so my team and I have gotten together. We have put our minds together about how we're going to keep our online classes going, and we've got it. So we've got the webcam ready. We've got the setup for the webcam in the studio. So we're likely going to have a soft opening in phase 3 or 4. We're not sure when that will be. But no matter when that happens, we're not going to stop our online classes. We've gotten such great feedback that they work for people's schedule and that you can really take the class anytime on your own. We've created this kind of on-demand system that we have class pretty much every morning live. And then we send out the link and you have that for 24 hours. And then I have a couple of re-releases. So if you forgot to sign up earlier or you want more time, you sign up for the re-release. This way you can take class on your schedule and you're still part of the community. So no matter whenever this happens, the studio gets back into its fullness, we're going to continue our online classes. We don't want to shut the door on the relationships and the community that we have formed beyond the Upper West Side. And I want to thank everyone who has shown up and enriched our community with your presence. Okay, I think that's it. So let's just take a quick break. When we come back, please enjoy my conversation with Lauren. Hi, Lauren. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Deb?
I'm doing really well. So I was cruising around on Instagram, as I often do, and I found that lecture you were doing about kind of getting back into the world of work. And I thought, all right, I got to reach out to Lauren and see if she can do the same thing, because I think this is something a lot of people are starting to juggle. How do you go back to work during this pandemic when, you know, when kids are still around? So I'm really, really excited to chat with you. Thank you for your time.
Oh, of course. Thank you. It's the parallels between returning to work after baby and returning to work-ish kind of after pandemic. I don't even want to say after pandemic. I don't think we're after
during?
Yet. are really similar. And I think some of the skills that, you know, that women develop when they are on maternity leave and returning to work the first time really, really apply. And if you're getting a double dose of it by returning during your first maternity leave, then first of all, like, bless you. Secondly, like, I'm here to help.
So let's back up. I've been thrilled to have you on the podcast before. I've read your book. You're just wonderful. Let's talk a little bit for those that don't know you, and I'll make sure in our show notes, I have all the links to all your stuff, but just share a little bit about yourself and your work.
Sure. So I was for years an editor at Glamour magazine. I was there for 13 years. It's where I had both of my sons who are now, we just had our big birthday week, and we had our younger one turned 9 and our older one turned 12. So I had them when I was there, and was there through, you know, all kinds of years of feast and famine in terms of, you know, the economy and the work I was doing and becoming, you know, getting married, having these two wonderful boys. And there was so much out there for me when I was pregnant and even immediately postpartum, even back then. But there was a lot about taking care of the baby. There was absolutely nothing about returning to work after baby. And like many, many American women, I went back after 12 weeks, which I thought was a generous amount of time because it was more than a lot of people I knew had access to. And in the United States, those 12 weeks are unpaid. Some of mine was covered, some of it wasn't. We were able to make it work for me to take the whole 12 weeks. I say whole in quotes, if you can hear air quotes on a podcast. And so I went back and it was really, really hard. And I didn't have a lot of resources sort of to guide me, to help me understand what was normal. And so when it felt hard, I thought it was my fault. And pretty quickly, I learned that actually that transition back to work is essentially a fifth trimester. I had learned about the fourth trimester from Harvey Karp's book, The Happiest Baby on the Block, which is this notion that I'm sure a lot of your readers already are in and know about how the human babies actually are born like a whole trimester earlier than other mammals. And so developmentally, they're not really like awake to the world till they're 3 months old. And I remember having read that, soothing my older son, Will, when he was first born and thinking like, well, crap, like that's when I have to go back to work. So I went back and I sort of muddled through that first transition, had a second son, muddled through the second transition, found along the way that actually they were in many ways times of great managerial growth for me because I was able to be so much more raw in myself and sensitive to other people's needs and efficient. You know, that's something a lot of people say. And pretty quickly after my second son realized that there was this whole notion of a fifth trimester that was developmental, but this one was for mom. And so I started doing some research casually. And then eventually I left my job and decided to get more formal about it and did a national survey and surveyed almost 800 working moms about their returns to work. Cause I knew that my experience had been one of privilege. I mean, you know, we talk a lot right now about white privilege, like, you know, and I'm learning more and more about it every day. But even then I knew that, you know, my experience of working with, you know, a gaggle of women and having a supportive husband and being able to take some paid leave, like that was more than many people had access to. So for the survey, I interviewed and surveyed women with as many different approaches to motherhood and career as I could conceive of. So there were single moms, there were adoptive moms, there were hourly wage working moms, there were same-sex partnered moms who had carried the baby, not carried the baby. There were certainly, you know, women who owned businesses or worked part-time or, you know, were doctors, lawyers, kind of everybody I could think of and any way to get to them, I found them. And I like to say that like the 3 days that I spent with all of the data were like the dorkiest and most fun of my life, like carrying all of these things that we have in common and that we have working for us and against us and really trying to boil it down to like, what supports do we all need? What lessons can we learn from each other so that we don't all have to learn them the hard way? And how can we align and how can we kind of be, you know, the expression of rising tide, you know, lifts all boats. How can we do that for each other? So I turned that into a book. The book came out 3 springs ago. I think that's when I first met you and talked to you. And then it came out in paperback the next year. And ever since then, it's really been a business. And it's become a business where I go into companies and organizations and help them see the value of supporting new parents and how that will eventually allow them to retain women and showing them all the data and numbers we have around the motherhood penalty and around how valuable women are if you do retain them and get them into leadership. But the only way to have female leaders is to be able to get them through this bump of a transition of new motherhood, which is not supported as it should be in a cultural and federal way in this country. And so that's where we are today. And I mostly do speaking, consulting. I do some individual coaching. And I do a lot of writing. I write for the New York Times sometimes. And now, fast forward to pandemic times, all my speaking, like immediately all the live events, of course, went away. And I thought, oh my God, like what is anybody even going to have budget to support new parents anymore? And, you know, there was definitely a blip of a month or two. And now it's become clear that as our country, as our world enters this sort of phased reopening, that all of a sudden everything's on the table and people really want to keep parts of what they liked about being home and working. And they want much more support for the parts that they didn't like and the cracks that are now a lot more visible, in terms of just how inaccessible good quality childcare is and inequities in the home and at work. And I've talked way too long, but that sort of gets us to exactly where we are right now.
Yeah, no, that was great. So right where we are, the integrating and the juggling of work and home and kids, I guess I want to hear, how is it going for you? What have you learned from this? I love this turn. I mean, I'll share what's going on with me, but I'd love to hear. I mean, you have so much knowledge about preparing for this transition and the juggling. And you just shared before we started, you spent a month in Connecticut, your home literally for a day, which I love, in New York City, then you're off again. So as you know, living this, how is this integration of work and home and kids going?
It is a work in progress. I think the hardest thing for me in the beginning, and I say this, you know, obviously with the security of knowing that my family is healthy and that, you know, like we're doing okay. The hardest thing for me was just the immediate transition from being somebody who was like dressed up on a stage advocating for women to like get the change they need in the workplace to make things fair, to someone who several days later was home with the kids. My husband is a doctor in a big hospital in New York, and so he was gone 14, 15 hours a day, and I was responsible for every bit of our home life and needed to be and wanted, obviously, in that moment to support the incredibly important job he was doing, support our kids who were, you know, obviously, you know, not in their usual routine. And all of a sudden I'm like, you know, scrubbing toilets every Wednesday, and I'm like, who is this person and how on earth do I maintain any kind of career? And so it did, you know, I did a bunch of interviews in the beginning about sort of home equity and how visible that invisible labor becomes, but, you know, always with the honest, you know, the honest lens of saying like, hey, but I'm not even necessarily, you know, practicing what I'm preaching right now. We're all just kind of doing the best we can in the circumstances that we have. And, you know, and since then we've shaken things out into, you know, a bit of a new normal. We were in the city, because my husband works here, and my work is more flexible, until we were here until the very end of May, and then rented a place in Connecticut that was actually close enough that he could still commute to work. I don't like being apart in the summers. A lot of families do that, and I find we're better and more together if we can be. And so I was with the kids again all day long while he like took the car. Oh, we got a car. We didn't have a car before. Suddenly we have a car payment because we had to get a car. You know, these are minor things, but they add up. And so we were out of the city for a month. We're back for a day right now. And we all just went and got COVID tests because we're about to go to my in-laws to spend July with them. So we have some childcare in rural kind of Western Pennsylvania. And I'll be able to do more work again, which is great. A lot of the work I'm doing, has moved into webinars and talks online instead. So this is our new normal, and we're just making it work.
Well, you just brought up something that I think many working parents are having issues with. I'll put myself in there. It is really challenging. The childcare, you are going for childcare, and that's hard. Like for my family, I don't think we're that unusual. School was our childcare, and then camp is our childcare. And we are going to do camp this summer. I'm a little anxious, but that's a whole nother topic. So let's talk about what are some ways working parents can negotiate flexibility with their employers, because childcare is not what it looked like, and who knows what it will look like going forward.
Right. I think it's really important anytime you enter into any kind of negotiation, and I'll give you sort of the specifics of how it applies here, but to think of this not just as something that you are asking for with your specific family's need, which of course that is why you're asking. That's what inspired you to like take this leap and ask. But to remember that when you do that, you are so often asking for something or planning for something or negotiating something that like tons of other people around you need, many of whom need it in a way that is maybe not as visible, and many of whom need it but don't feel they have whatever privilege you have to be able and the agency that you have to be able to ask for it. So you may feel like, gosh, I have these little kids. I don't think I can, you know, the daycare is not open yet, or, you know, for some reason our caregiver who comes to our home can't be here, or my mom can't travel to be with us the way she usually, whatever it is, you know. But in reality, you probably have coworkers who, somebody has a spouse who's sick, somebody is, you know, engaged in elder care with an older parent, somebody may have an older child who has a special need, somebody may have even just taking care of, just, there's no just to this, but taking care of your own mental health. You know, there are going to be so many reasons. Somebody may have someone in their family who's immunocompromised. So many reasons people have that they can't just flip the switch and be back at work 5 days a week. So your need as a parent is getting a lot more airtime and play than a lot of those other needs. And so please, you know, go into those conversations with the strength of knowing that this is something you're actually doing for the greater good. And that can be very galvanizing. And it also can just give you some confidence going into it. Then in terms of what you're asking for, I like to say, look at the parts. And I am an optimist, and I apologize if, you know, if these 3 months have been nothing but pure hell and misery for you. I understand that. And there's parts of this that have been, you know, obviously really uncomfortable for me as well. But if you can identify anything about this time that you would like to keep, whether it is that you got to eat lunch every day with your partner, or that you got to get your kids dressed in the morning, or that you got to put them to bed, or that, you know, you loved being home with them during the day, you know, for more playtime and didn't mind as much the working at night in order to make up those hours, figure out. Or you maybe you loved not having a commute, or maybe you missed having a commute. Figure out sort of what's on your hit list of like what was good about this time and what totally sucked about this time, and use that first list as a guide to what you might want to negotiate for right now. Because I think like no time before, you know, you keep hearing the newscasters say like in this unprecedented time, well, this is an unprecedented time for asking for flexibility. And that flexibility can be defined in so many different ways. It could be location, it could be hours, it could be duties, it could be the time, not total time you spend doing your job, but like the times in the day that you do your job. There's lots and lots of ways to define it. And you're the one holding the dictionary right now. You are really allowed to ask for what's going to make it work for you to continue doing your job in a way that is productive and that supports the economy. So, and employers don't have necessarily the bandwidth right now to start thinking about what every single employee needs. They just know that they want to be fair and they want to retain people and they want to bring business in and be able to pay them. So whatever you can do to imagine what that situation would look like that would make you feel really satisfied and like your children are cared for in the way that makes you feel good and responsible, go ahead and lay the plan out for them. Say, this is what it could look like and here's how I think I can make it work.
That's great. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, if you have any set ideas of points to be prepared to negotiate, is there anything that you're like, all right, here is a go-to? We'll be right back.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTCAL.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
This is the summer to expand your horizons. It's time to explore. But before you set foot out the door, set foot in the ultimate lightweight, super packable travel shoes from Allbirds. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com.
Okay, we are back. So I love your idea of like being prepared, know what you want to say, but what are some of those things that we should be prepared to negotiate?
Well, I think you want to negotiate, you know, first and foremost for your ability for your children to be cared for, right? Because it's nearly impossible to do your job if you feel like you're doing it at the expense of your kids' safety or health. So start there. Second point, I think, would be financial. There are a lot of people who I talk to, both on both sides, both moms and employers, who assume that if you are asking for flexibility, that has to come with a pay cut. It really doesn't, and in some ways, that contributes to this studied, I was going to say the notion, but it's not a notion, it's real, the motherhood penalty, which is the decrease in women's status and income after, you know, per child, for every child they have. It's entirely based in bias, and, you know, just don't be biased against yourself. Don't assume you should earn less. If you're still doing the same job, if you're still delivering your full job, you should be paid full time for it. So there's that. So something around childcare and flexibility to let you have safe kids and feel good about it. Secondly, protecting your income. You know, no matter how generous and empathetic and do-gooding your employer is, like, they're a business and they have to make sense in terms of business. And in order to do that, they probably have to be profitable. Even in a nonprofit, obviously there are numbers, you know, your P&L has to make sense. So you have to show them that you're going to be able to deliver the deliverables that they're counting on you to do and that they're paying you for. And then I think, you know, there's a whole other line of negotiation, of course, and this might be a later question that you have in mind, but, around stuff at home and how to make things equitable at home in a way that lets you do your job well, and to negotiate coming into those conversations in the workplace, knowing that you're not going to be, you know, floundering just to get your job done because things really aren't fair at home.
I think you really hit on something like that. And as I was preparing this question, I often try not to do a yes or no question, but this one keeps sticking in my mind, is do you think it's actually possible to accomplish the same amount of work at home with family around? Because I'm struggling with that. I don't know about you, but I'm finding myself up to like 10:30, 11 with my computer in my lap because I then had to spend 3 hours working on my son's oak tree project with him. That was a real situation.
I mean, totally. Like, we've been there. I can't tell you, like, I wrote a column for a brand that I worked for, and like, I was talking about everything that's on the table, you know, and like, there was like school stuff, work stuff, you know, pets, like my dining table was just covered in, like, you know, if you took like a time capsule of my life, that's what it was right then. I think in short, the answer is no, it's not possible to do, you know, every single thing exactly the way you've done it before when you are also trying to do a whole other additional job, which is caring for children. And if there is one silver lining that's come out of this, it's that now I think we're all painfully aware of the fact that that is a job. You know, we have sorely, sorely undervalued domestic work, whether that is done by somebody who you hire, who is a domestic worker, or if that's just you adding on to what, you know, you do in your normal day-to-day job, but also you come home and you have this whole second shift. We are now painfully aware of the cost of that, of, you know, like the value of doing that load of laundry. Like, you can actually put a dollar amount on it. And it, in some cases, the dollar amount that some women have needed to, parents have needed to walk away from in their pay in order to be able to do that. So their kids do have those clean clothes. So, you know, in the most basic sense, yes or no, like, no, I don't think it's really possible. However, I say that with a big, you know, the big caveat is that I think that, at least I know this is true for me, and it's true for a lot of the women I've worked with, we undervalue ourselves. And so, you know, yes, you may not be able to work exactly the same number of hours. However, if the work you're doing is infused with expertise, and if the career that you've built has relationships that are valuable, and just, you know, knowledge that is valuable, and team building camaraderie that is valuable, those aren't things that you really necessarily measure in minutes and hours. I do a lot of work with attorneys. That's a lot of my private coaching clients are attorneys, and they have this really tough burden of measuring their output in, you know, 6-minute increments. And if you work in a field where you don't have to measure, you're not necessarily working in a shift or working by the hour, but really it's about your expertise, I would take a hard look at what you charge for that expertise and of what shortcuts you can make that are incredibly valuable. You know, there are, you know, you may not be able to work, you know, your full, whatever, 8 or 9 hours. However, if you have the most genius idea, you know, of the year in the shower or when you're out for a walk with your kid, because that's when your mind is kind of freest, like that is probably more valuable than the 9 hours you would have spent that day.
It's really important to reframe
our value in that way.
It's a really good point. I want to talk a little bit about actually transitioning back to work. And one of my really good friends, she's in finance, and we talked about going back to work. And she's not particularly comfortable, but she feels that she has to go back. She chose around September. And she said there's peer pressure. I guess there's, again, I'm not in the corporate world, so forgive my ignorance here. She's more of a senior. She said more of the juniors are going back way earlier. But Even though she has been working from home successfully, she feels pressure that if she doesn't show up in this more male-dominated field, she's going to be, it's going to be frowned upon. So, and I don't think she's isolated. I think this happens a lot. So what advice would you give for someone in that scenario where they feel pressured to return, even if they would prefer to work at home?
Well, I think in a perfect world, she would find a couple of male colleagues who are at her level or even more senior than she is to align with her and kind of all take the same degree of time from home versus time physically at the office. You know, the reason all of those more junior employees are showing up is because they feel like the expectation is that they have to. It's not because they don't have kids. You know, maybe they are gunners. Maybe they really are striving and trying to use this time as an opportunity to move ahead and, you know, good for them. But more likely, they're taking their cues from those same senior leadership men that your friend is. And so if she can get any of them on board to, you know, somehow be more flexible in the time that they're in versus not in the office, that would be helpful. I also think, you know, depending on if she lives in New York, I mean, everything that we're hearing about social distancing in the workplace is going to necessitate shifts of, you know, maybe it's two weeks at home, 1 week in the office. I mean, this ends up being really messy in terms of childcare. But, you know, I bet it's not going to be as cut and dry as she thinks. I bet there are going to be other people who have reasons besides her to need to be home, like I said earlier. And if she can find them and she can work with them, she won't feel like she's the only. Loneliness is very often feels stigmatizing, but if you really just to your toenails think of it as something that is a strength and that is an opportunity to define sort of a new standard, it can really work to your advantage.
That's really good.
It's a lot about personal branding. She has to, like, if she's going to be the only one who's home, she needs to be super in touch with people, obviously, like, you know, super dependable, but of course she's going to be and do her job well. But she also needs to advertise the fact that she's doing it and say, hey, look at me. Like, this is how this can work. And I'm doing great.
That's fantastic advice because I'm sure she's not alone. So as I was looking at your description of what you've been talking about recently, you said something that really caught my eye. You said that this conversation may help those who can use their privilege they've got for others who may not be able to speak up as freely. Can you expand on that? Because you also touched upon right now is a very rich time for people to step back and look at their privilege and how we can help others. So can you go a little further with that?
Yeah. So, you know, very often, you know, it's a funny swirl. It's, you know, so I think that there is something, and I'm absolutely generalizing, not everyone feels this way. And if you don't, there's nothing wrong with you, but a lot of women describe that when they become mothers, suddenly they have just, you know, a sense of duty to the world that they may never have had before. You know, every person they see, they realize is somebody's child. And so, you know, you can use that actually to your benefit and to your workplace's benefit. And, you know, very often it's, you know, there women and new mothers in particular are underserved by our culture and by our workplaces. However, you know, team by team, people love to help. People love to help a mom. People love to help a baby. Like, it's a pretty easy, like, cute thing that we throw a shower for, you know, in like the before times, like we would have cupcakes for you, right? If you have a sick parent who's dying, you may need just as much time at home. You may need actually more mental health support than a new mom may need. And yet nobody's throwing you a party with cupcakes. So, or if you are, you know, if there's an intersectional need going on, if you are both a new mother and you are Black, and we know that, you know, going really dark really fast, but it's just true and it needs to be said. So maternal mortality in our country is up by about half. Globally, it is down by about half, which just tells you how desperately far behind the United States is. And when you look at the reason why that number exists here, it is primarily because Black and brown women die at 3 to 4 times the rate of white women in this country around childbirth. And so when you have someone who is, you know, a minority in the workplace and is also a new mom, you know, they may not feel like they can advocate for themselves. They might be carrying, you know, an additional burden. So if you have only one, you know, burden going on at a time, like, get in there, do something, you know, for everybody, and realize that the need that you have is probably shared by a lot of other people who aren't able to be as vocal about it.
That's great. Yeah, pave the way so that it's easier for the person behind you and the person behind that person, the person behind. So you're like, you're just trudging it out. I love that. Thank you.
All right. Mothers have this natural thing to make things fair. I think our teachers, our kids teach us that, you know, like from the very beginning. And we are the arbiters of fairness very often in the workplace. And so that can start with being fair to yourself and then explaining to everybody around you how that's going to benefit them and your larger organization too.
That's perfect. So as I was writing these questions, feeling pressed for time, as I often do in my world, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about the struggle. One of my main struggles, I feel like I toss myself into my bed every night with my same complaint is that, and I don't think I'm alone, that's why I'm bringing it up, is there, my days are like 14-hour days with just the kids. So my kids happen to get up around 6:30 a.m. and they don't usually go to bed till like 8:30, and that's 14 hours straight of them with dealing with work and managing the house. And so you clean the toilets on Wednesday. I do it Saturday. That's my 5-hour Saturday. It's cleaning the house from top to bottom, and it is exhausting. There's practically no downtime, and I'm constantly feeling burnt out. So I'd love to hear if you have any suggestions for this burnout that I think it's so common that many of us are just trying to do it all.
So I think like anything, I think talking about it really helps. You know, on those Wednesdays, those are my podcast binging Wednesdays, you know, so I'm scrubbing the toilet, but I am listening to, you know, Cheryl Strayed's podcast that she does for the New York Times, where she's interviewing, prominent authors of how they're getting through this time. And it's, you know, it's pretty perspective building. Now, mind you, my kids are older. And this is like, how many times in these stories and podcasts have you heard somebody like me say, oh, my kids are old enough that like, I don't have to watch them constantly. It's true. However, you know, they also both, when they had school, one of them needed help literally every 8 minutes. And I want to be able to offer that to him. So anyway, so I think some of it is, you know, rewarding yourself when you are doing the thing that just feels soul-suckingly like not valuable in some way. I did a lot of like, you know, calling friends during that time, where we would sort of try to coordinate so that if we were doing something mindless but necessary, that we could also just be with each other. That was very helpful. What else? I think, you know, obviously, first and foremost, going easy on yourself, you know, just knowing that, thinking long-term, you know, when we think of who our kids are going to be, you know, 20, 30 years from now, when they look back on this, you know, they're not going to remember which cartoons they watched and, you know, what video games they played. I mean, maybe they will if they're like, my kids are playing a lot of video games. I think what they're going to remember, and I don't think they're going to remember being scared, I think they're going to remember that they were brave, and they're going to be so proud, you know, especially the littlest ones, like the 3 and 4 year olds now, you know, who aren't really going to have strong memories. They're just going to be able to be proud to say, we got through this, we did this. And my mom, my goodness, she was able to like do her job and, you know, take care of me, because we're going to tell them these stories. And in order for them to have those feelings and in order for them to be able to hear those stories, you know, we have to be proud of them now. You know, I talk a lot in, you know, for years, I've talked a lot about bringing your whole self to work, like being really open about your motherhood in the workplace. Well, I think that this has been a giant, you know, flip of the coin, so that we've had to be really open about what work we do, why we do it, the value it brings, why it's important to us in front of our kids. And so if you find yourself 10 times a day saying to your 4-year-old, mommy has to work now, also say, here's why. And say, sometimes it's hard. And say, but I like it. And it's important to me. And I hope you get to do stuff that you like one day too. Like, just go ahead and say those things. You know, I found that like, kind of the more you communicate with them, the more they give back to you. So, you know, if my kids are like, if I'm on 3, if I'm like, you know, I've said something 3 times, I will say to them, this is just so you're aware, the 3rd time that I've said this, and I feel myself getting very angry. And it's amazing. It like really gets their attention and it keeps me from exploding. Right. So they're capable of hearing more, I think we can tell them. And, you know, I just remember as a kid always wanting to be taken seriously. And we're spending a lot of time with these kids right now, and they're seeing our humanity and we're seeing theirs. And I think that there's a lot of benefit in that.
I actually agree about that. There's definitely times I can appreciate, I'm like, we're spending time, a lot of time in little things that I'm liking. I'm really enjoying certain things about it. On the other side, it's also a bit challenging. I think, you know, it's kind of the yin yang, but I like what you said about explaining. I hope that you too find something that you like. I like, this is important, because I think I'm leaving that piece out, that I'm just like, mommy's working. And I'm not saying like, but this is important to me, you know? So I think that can change their perspective.
It's hard for work to feel, you know, enjoyable if you don't have time to reach like flow, you know, that's sort of like the trendy word for it right now. So, you know, you don't feel like you have to tell your children you love your work, but I think you should tell them why you value it, why you're doing it, why it's important. And that sometimes it's really hard, but that you do it anyway, because those are all wonderful things for our kids to see role modeled.
Oh yeah. We say that when my son's like, I don't want to do this. It's boring. I'm like, well, sometimes work is boring. And apparently all distant learning to him is boring, but that's a whole nother topic. Right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, if you have one tip or piece of advice you'd like to offer new and expectant parents, we'll be right back. Okay, we are back. So you have 2 kids, you've been doing this for a while, you have a lot of understanding of parenthood and postpartum. So what would one tip or piece of advice be for new or expectant parents?
As best you can, split the sleep wake-ups equitably. Mm-hmm. So, you know, depending on how you're feeding your baby, that, you know, you may need to have your baby at your breast in the night. And I understand that. But to whatever degree you could potentially pump a bottle and give it to your partner if you have a partner, or, you know, maybe use formula for a bottle. Couples, the research shows that couples actually tend to choose partners who are the opposite of what they are in terms of being a nighttime person or a morning person. There's something, there's like a little test you can take online called the morningness eveningness scale. And I think it's, the idea is that, you know, it developed from the time, you know, of cave people, when, you know, whoever could have their fire outside the cave lit for the greatest number of hours in the day was more likely to survive and procreate, something like that. But anyway, so if you have, you know, a partner who is a morning person and you're an evening person, trade off and see if, you know, one person can be on baby duty in the morning and you could be on, you know, in the night or whatever works out. And in terms of the waking up, try to preserve at least 2 REM cycles, which is 4 hours in a row for each of you. In a perfect world, you would like each get two full nights in a row to kind of have a reset to be the most functional you could be the next morning. But The second best is to get 4 hours, not of total sleep. You want, obviously, like total sleep, you want to be like around 8 hours if you can get it. But one of those chunks should be 4 hours. And one way to do that is like if you can go to bed at 9, leave a bottle with your partner, and then not be up again until 1 a.m., that gives you those two solid REM cycles. That's really protective of your ability to function the next morning. And there's all kinds of studies and information that show that, you know, partners and dads who wake up in the night, even though they might be more tired, actually have more satisfying relationships. And, you know, that mom is not always, this is very gendered, but that mom is not always aware. Sorry, that mom is very aware when dad's up in the night, but dad isn't always aware when mom is up in the night. So you really want to have like a morning check-in, because otherwise it just breeds so much resentment. It's steeped in, you know, income inequality. It's, you know, if dad is, you know, working longer hours or making more money, you know, the idea is that, you know, his sleep is more valuable. Well, no, not really, because the job that you're doing is keeping a human baby alive, and that is pretty damn valuable. Anyway, I could go on and on and on. But basically, the tip is split your sleep as equitably as you possibly can.
I wish I had that one, that tip when I was with my babies, my kids, because it was beautiful. My son, with my first, my husband actually got up with me. He would read me a book. Like, we had this book that we just read together. And it was actually one of my favorite memories of our time as new parents. That did not happen at the second. But it's such great advice. All right, where can people find your work?
Oh, great. So my website is thefifthtrimester, all spelled out, .com. I am mostly on Instagram at thefifthtrimester. And I have a lot of resources there for how to negotiate for things, for how to understand the motherhood penalty, for how to ask for flexibility. So it's all just there for free if you want it. But certainly if you think that your workplace or organization would benefit from having me do some management training or some coaching or give a talk to the new parents, I am super available, and just DM me on Instagram.
Oh, thank you so much. I've so enjoyed our connection and chat again. Thank you for making time. I know your day is crazy, so I'll let you go. But I'm so glad that we had a chance to connect.
Thanks, Dev. Take care.
Bye.
This has been an episode of Yoga Birth Babies, produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. You can catch us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Thanks for listening.